Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB. 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Now today, we've got someone that was just over in England, I guess a while back, and he's written a book. He's been on the show before. He's our animal communicator, Rob Guttrow, and his book, Ghosts of England on a Medium's Vacation. So welcome, Rob.
Hi, Al. Hi, Julie. How are you today?
Really good. Really good. I'm really looking forward to this interview, Rob, because as the listeners have just been told, helpfully by Al, you know, we've spoken before, and you are just such a humble guy who says it as it is. And as a fellow medium, I know we share a lot of the same views in terms of our development and how that happens. And we put it into kind of real terms. Mm-hmm. And I love your books for that.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
So I think where I would like to start with this discussion, because I don't like to think of these things as interviews, because I think that's just too formal. But I think where I'd like to really begin is just a very brief overview in terms of how you've got to where you are, just for those listeners who may not be aware of your works to date. And one of the things that I'm keen to explore with you is how you always say that you are just starting out on this mediumship journey and what that means for you. So who is Rob and where did this all begin?
Okay, sure. By trade, I'm a meteorologist, so I'm a scientist. So a lot of my experiences are all foundational in how energy works, because that's basically what it is. When we pass away, we become energy, and we stay here as a ghost, or we cross over as a spirit. I actually developed this ability, or I was awakened to the fact that I had this ability when I was a teenager, and I encountered my grandfather after he passed away. And over time, I kind of put it on a shelf until I was in a comfortable place in life. And then I had a puppy that passed away in 2005 named Buzz, and he showed me how pets communicate from the other side in many ways. So I've written a couple books about animals, so pets in the afterlife, which we discussed the last time, I think. So pets aren't the only ones that come to me. I've had a lot of people come to me, ghosts and who are earthbound and spirits who have crossed over.
Okay, so just for the for clarity, mm-hmm. Tell me the difference in the communication. Tell me why people may be presenting to you as a ghostly form as opposed to a spirit form. What's the difference?
So ghosts, we all make a choice when we pass away. And when our physical energies couple with our memories, personality, and our knowledge, we make a choice conscious choice to stay here earthbound as what I call a ghost, or we cross over and join the energies that run through the universe or heaven or Valhalla, whatever you want to call the other side. And that's what I call a spirit. So it's location, location, location.
Do you believe, Rob, that because some theories say that we do make that decision, but we can make that decision in terms of depending on where, what level we go to when we pass over. So depending on our learnings in life, depending how many times we've been reincarnated, depending mm-hmm. on how great we get, in, for want of a better phrase, we can then say, actually, we're okay on this level. We're doing all right. Or we can go back and try again. Is that your belief system?
I do believe that we come back until we are satisfied with our level on the other side. So like that person that cut you off in traffic today, Julie, they're going to come back.
I hope so.
They're not perfect yet.
I'll be the traffic officer. I'll be coming back too. I'll be the police officer working in traffic. Yeah, so and there's so many different theories out there. So in terms of your own development, which I am absolutely with you that we're always learning, how did you evidence that? What is it that you learnt or you experienced that absolutely helped you understand there's a choice to be made at that point?
It's actually the messages that I get from people, mostly people, because most pets cross over. So yeah. People make a conscious choice to stay earthbound or to cross over. And because I belong to a paranormal group in Inspired Ghost Tracking of Maryland, we do a lot of investigations of places where homes and so forth, where people stayed as ghosts. And they tell me reasons why they've stayed, whether it be unfinished business or they think they can help the family get over their passing, or there's something they want to tell the family, or they don't want to leave their childhood home, or many, many reasons why they decide to stay. But they really all need to cross.
So what do you think the most common reason is of staying? What would be the benefit to somebody to stay?
There really is no benefit. I liken being an earthbound ghost as living in an isolation prison where you cannot communicate with your loved ones in spirit who have crossed, and you can rarely speak to some of the living. The only living people that can communicate with ghosts are those who are mediums.
And how does if you're not able to communicate with those living, how do we investigate and pick up on those ghosts and communicate with them as a medium? And how do other people experience, for example, poltergeists?
So I've learned that poltergeist activity is really energy that simulates an earthbound ghost. It's emotional energy, typically emitted by teenagers. Teenagers going through a change can copy, if you will, the energy of a ghost and make things happen, like things fly off the shelf, or you may feel touched by something that's not there. What was the other part of your question there?
It was about how that communication happens. So if an earthbound ghost is not able to make mm-hmm. the communication, how do poltergeists do that? What's the difference?
Earthbound ghosts, if they get enough energy, they can make people feel things or move things or even appear as a dark shadow, for instance. My theory is that when people see shadow figures, it's just that the ghost doesn't have enough energy to appear in full color.
Yeah.
It all depends on how much energy they can gather in order to provide a signal to the living, whether it be making a noise or moving something or audibly speaking so that we pick it up. It's all about the energy and that they can gather.
So in terms of your own development, your understanding the different realms, you put things in such an easy way, Rob. So people who are listening to this show will have heard us interview people who talk about and use very jargonistic language that is really mm-hmm. quite hard for anybody to understand. And I've never yet heard you do that. It's all very much about what you've learned and the practicalities. since we last spoke, what's been your greatest learning since we last spoke, so in the last couple of years?
Well, I think the greatest lesson I've ever learned, Julie, is from the other side, and that is that we really need to teach to practice kindness to everybody. That's animals and humans, because that's actually what makes our spirit stronger while we're alive and stronger on the other side. So it's really just, it's a simple lesson, and that's just treat each other with kindness.
And when we were last talking, as you identified, we were talking about your book, Pets in the Afterlife, and talking about kind of, you know, the communication style and how that differs. So mm-hmm. How do you adapt your mediumship where, I guess, if you're similar to myself, you receive information, it's almost as a thought that comes in, and you have to distinguish whether that's yours or a spiritual message.
Yes.
Does it differ with an animal?
The only way it differs with an animal is from the perspective of the animal. So what I mean by that is that messages can come in the way that a dog or cat would have perceived them when they were living. They can come in to me. I can hear them, feel them, see them, even smell them. I've smelled wet dog on occasion. Dogs or cats will share words that they were familiar with in life. They'll share an image of a person that they're standing with on the other side, and they'll have me describe them. Even a cat would know somebody's name. A friend of mine lost his cat this year, and he sent me an email, and he told me that. And he said, "Is my cat okay?" And I told him, I said, "Your cat is fine in spirit, but keeps telling me the name Dave, and Dave is with your cat, Bunny. And I don't know who Dave is, but Dave seems to be someone who is a contemporary, a colleague of yours." And he wrote me back, and he said, "Dave was my best friend in college who passed away."
Wow, so powerful, isn't it? Because, I mean, I think you're right. It's a real gift to be able to communicate already. And then when you can communicate on different levels and with lost pets as well, they are our family. When they're here and they're on Earth, they're our family. And so when we lose them, it's a huge gap, you know, as it is losing a human companion. So it's comforting for people to know that those pets are still very much able to make contact and give reassurances. What's the strangest message you've ever had from a pet?
From a pet? I wouldn't say strange, but I will tell you that, that, like people, some of them have told me that they don't want other pets in the household to play with certain toys that they've identified.
Who can blame them?
Yes.
That's pretty cool. And so I can just imagine, actually, people come into my house and they look at my dog's toy box, and I can't imagine Molly when eventually she passes, her ever wanting any other dog anywhere near those toys. It's like a toddler's playpen.
Yes.
So they will all go with her, I think. So you've recently been in the UK. I'm absolutely astounded that you didn't even look me up, knowing that I was here, and have gone on ghost hunts. So tell me more about this trip to the UK and what inspired you.
Well, they were actually before I knew you, because it was in 2012 and 2013, so I have an excuse.
You are somewhat forgiven.
Well, thank you.
So tell me about the inspiration for that, because quite often, actually, there's a few people that we've interviewed that have come over to explore the UK and the history here.
Well, the planned vacations were actually not my idea, but I am so glad that I went on them. They were actually the idea of my husband, who is somewhat of an amateur historian on the Tudors. Mm-hmm. So, and the Tudor period, so Henry VIII and Queen Elizabeth and so forth. So he worked with a travel agent to put together these two trips, and we visited Tudor palaces, Tudor homes, Tudor burial sites, and you know, quite frankly, I have to tell you, I really don't know the history. I didn't know the history at all. That was his thing. I have my own hobbies and so forth, and so I went over there not knowing anything, and I had all of these amazing experiences and all these Tudor locations and non-Tudor locations, from Westminster Abbey to Hampton Court Palace.
Wow. And both are fantastic places. And I know that I've walked several times around Hampton Court Palace investigating the history and those that have passed. So tell me about the tour. What did you set up? Where did you go?
We went, as I mentioned, Westminster Abbey and Hampton Court Palace, but we also went to we visited the Banqueting House, which is the last remnant of Whitehall Palace. We went to the Tower of London, and there were many ghosts there, just like in Hampton Court. We went to Canterbury, Stratford-upon-Avon, Sudley Castle. We had a ghost in our room in Thornbury Castle.
Wow.
And I actually wound up, and in the book that I wrote, The Ghosts of England on a Medium's Vacation, I actually revealed his identity. I found out who he was and why he was there. And then I'll have to wait until I came home to figure out who he was and why he was there. But I went to Windsor and York and...
Whilst you were there, then come back and research it? Or did you know anything about the history before you went? I mean, I'm not a history buff at all. So for me, when I go to a historic place and come up with a name, I then have to go back home and look into that and research it. And is that what happened?
That's exactly what happened. As I said, I had no idea about where we were or what the history of the place was. So it was fascinating.
How did that particular? So if we just take that one spirit in one room, how did you know they were there?
The ghost in Thornbury Castle.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So Thornbury Castle. Just a little bit of background. Thornbury Castle was a castle that was built by the Duke of Buckingham during Henry VIII's time, and the Duke of Buckingham was known to be could have been a rival to the throne of Henry VIII. So, of course, Henry had him beheaded to eliminate the competition. As he did many. And Henry, of course, took his palace, took the Thornbury Castle. And so today, Thornbury Castle is a luxury bed and breakfast, and it appears as if it is in ruins, but in fact, it was just never finished being built. So there are walls and fireplaces that look like they were in ruins, but they were never finished. There are two main parts of the castle, and both of them are used as a bed and breakfast. So we were fortunate enough to stay in one of them. And in this particular room, we both sensed a man. So I have to go back for a moment and tell you that my husband, Tom, is also – he developed his medium abilities in Westminster Abbey when we visited in 2012.
Wow.
And it was freaky because he would confirm everything that I got and vice versa. When I'm in the presence of a ghost or a spirit, I get a headache in the back of my head. When he's in the presence of a ghost or a spirit, he would smell a smell that simulated a rotting corpse.
Ew, that's not quite so good.
No. So he can have that.
Yeah, we'll leave that with him.
I'll take the headache.
Yeah, I get cold, so I think I'd just rather put a jumper on than get that smell.
I'm with you. So we both sensed a man that was standing in our room. We didn't know who he was. When I went and took a shower. That's usually when I get a lot of messages because I'm at peace. I'm calm. So he told me his name was Rupert, and then he also mentioned the word Whittenham, and I didn't know what Whittenham was. The other thing before I was able to solve the mystery when I came home, so I was armed with those two pieces of information, but I did tell Rupert before he went to sleep. I said, Rupert, I know you're here. I'm not going to tell you to leave, but please just don't wake us until dawn. Well, unfortunately, I didn't remember that in May, dawn was at 5:15 a.m. We're in England. And the locked iron window grate that was outside of our window. It was locked when we went to sleep. Was suddenly opened and slammed against the stone wall at 5:15 as the sun was peeking over the horizon.
Nice alarm clock.
Yes. I should have told him to wait till 7 a.m.
Could have been much more specific with an English ghost.
Yes. So when I came home, I found out his identity. He turned out to be a Prince Rupert that fought in a battle nearby. And the reason he stayed was because the nearby battle, which was in Wittenham, as it turns out, a little borough, I guess, was the site of his greatest defeat. And he never got over it. So when he died, he stayed there. And Thornbury Castle was actually the closest to the battlefield.
Okay, and did you manage to find out any relevance to why the window grate would be slammed, or was it just the way your intention?
That was just his way of waking us up when I said, you just don't bother us until sunrise. So he wanted to be kind of a smart aleck.
Yeah. Well, you may ask me this, but I'll do my own thing anyway. And so you had that experience. I'm intrigued by the experience with your partner and developing those, you know, mediumship in Westminster Abbey. What was his beliefs before, Rob? I can't remember when we've discussed yourselves before what his beliefs were.
Well, he never had the ability, or he said he never had it. He was always very skeptical about it. But we are both on a paranormal investigative team here in Maryland. And when we entered Westminster Abbey, we went to part of the abbey where some of the people were, some of the kings were buried. And he suddenly said he felt nauseous. He said he smelled like a rotting corpse smell. And I was getting a headache, and I knew that there was somebody standing next to us. And it was, I sensed that there was a monk standing near us. And there were so many ghosts walking around Westminster Abbey. That's where it started. And from then on, every time we went somewhere throughout our vacation, we would both get a sense at the same time. But one of the most startling wake-up calls to his abilities happened right there in Westminster Abbey after his abilities started to develop. We were standing in front of the tomb of Anne of Cleves, who was Henry VIII's, I believe, fourth wife. Mm-hmm. We were about 20 feet apart. We were both standing facing the tomb. There was nobody between us. And at the same exact time, somebody pulled the hair on our heads. We were 20 feet apart. So they pulled the hair on the left side of my head and the right side of his, and he was standing to the left of me. So it was like somebody had an arm's length of 20 feet that pulled our hair at the same time. And we both turned to each other and said, "Oh my gosh, somebody just pulled my hair." And he said the same thing. And I thought, "Oh my gosh, that's crazy."
Yeah. And so if he was quite skeptical before, but still part of a paranormal group, which is a good thing. It's always good to have people that are skeptical. And I think it's always good for a medium to be skeptical. Mm-hmm. How did he manage that? How did he cope with that sudden switch on? Because for some of us, it takes a while. Some of it just happens overnight, and it's quite hard to adapt to.
Well, the good thing is, from then on, he believed me every time I told him something.
You are no longer totally doolally.
Right. I wasn't out of my mind anymore. He actually he goes on to confirm like a lot of the things that I get.
It's so funny because my husband is a complete non-believer, or so he says. So I say to him, "Well, what are you saying then? That I'm a liar?" And he looks at me, "I'm not quite sure what to say.
Yeah, that's a bad position for him to be in, right?
It's a real squirming position, which is really quite good fun for me. So, and I absolutely, of course, I absolutely get that people don't take to that easily. And if you've been somebody who is fairly skeptical or a complete non-believer, to suddenly have somebody confirming things and saying things that are confirmed by others, it must be fairly eerie to be sat there thinking, how do they get this information? How do they know this stuff? And not be able to make sense of it. So for him to kind of switch on that ability, stood in this absolute majestic arena that is Westminster Abbey, and then start to kind of pick up as you went around different venues. Where did you go to next in your trail for, the UK history of the Tudors?
We went to a pub, actually, and that turned out to be haunted. And then we went to St. Paul's Cathedral, which turned out to be haunted. And then we went to Sir John Soane's Museum, which turned out to have a ghost dog in it, which we can address in a bit. but the Banqueting House was the next Tudor stop.
Okay.
Tudor era
so
stop.
We have a lot of old pubs in the UK that are haunted with various activity. Mm-hmm. And some more famous than others, but I think probably most older pubs probably will claim a spirit or a ghost or two. And certainly I've investigated the Anne of Cleves pub, which is further north than London. So tell me about the pub experience. Where was this in London?
This was called Lord Moon of the Mall, and it was down the street from 10 Downing Street. Mm-hmm. And before you get to Buckingham Palace, I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
It's on Whitehall Street. That's where it is. So when we were visiting there, and we really had to learn the protocol for going to a pub. We didn't realize that you had to order at the bar, yeah, and then and seat, and then go back and go get your food and bring it to the table. We saw a couple of American tourists that were waiting a long time, sitting down, waiting for someone to wait on them, and we thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But while we were there, I heard a male voice, and he said, "My name is Andrew," and he told me that he lived there in the early 1700s, and he actually operated a business out of the same structure, but it wasn't a pub at the time.
Mm-hmm.
When he was talking to me, I started taking pictures at the bar, and sure enough, there were a couple of orbs that appeared at the bar. So for listeners, an orb is the most simple form a ghost can take, and I'm not a big believer in orbs, but I have come to find out that orbs mostly are actual ghosts or spirits if they have colors and designs in them and they can have faces in them. We've taken a couple of pictures as paranormal investigators that have actually revealed faces in orbs. But if they're white in color, they're either reflections of dust or pollen or bugs or something like that. But so Andrew was there, and he was wearing an apron, and he looked like a butcher to me. And actually, he smelled like a butcher. It wasn't from the pub.
You guys have got this real rotting and flesh thing going on, haven't you? It's not good.
Yeah, it was an interesting kickoff to his abilities.
What did you particularly notice? Was there a difference to that style of ghost? Are ghosts different in that kind of venue as to places that you've investigated in the States?
No, not really. Not really any difference. They just appeared as they looked at the time that they lived, mm-hmm. time in which they lived. So this gentleman looked like he was probably from the 1700s or even 1600s.
Find that easy, Rob, to identify? Because actually we tend to consider when trying to make sense of somebody or something that we're seeing or hearing, we're thinking in our own culture. So mm-hmm. so it tends an additional level for us to be presented with somebody and try and make sense of where they're from if it's something different than our norm. So did that make sense quickly for you, or was it something you had to really kind of think about and research?
That one was actually pretty fast for me mm-hmm. to make sense of, that he may have been a butcher at the time. Right. And this was kind of an open open area shop at that time. But others, like Prince Rupert, didn't make sense to me. There were, as we went on, though, there were a couple of others that that made immediate sense to me.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One was the ghost of a dog, and the other was some sickly ghosts at the banqueting house of Whitehall Palace.
So let's talk about the dog. I mean, I remember in my very early days, I made a horrific error by seeing a dog. And I'm not sure if we talked about this before, but it was a scenario where somebody, I was doing a recce for an investigation, and the lady on reception kept asking me for a reading. Please just give me something. And I said, like, I'm really sorry. Just kind of checking out the venue. I'm not doing readings. Mm-hmm. And this lady, she kept asking and asking. And I was really very conscious of this dog running around. So I referenced the dog. I said, look, all I can talk about really is the dog is with you. I gave her all the details. And she said, all the details are absolutely right. She said, but I haven't got a dog in spirit. And it was so early days. And so I kept saying, well, I kept giving more and more factual information. And this the more I was giving it, I was just digging my own grave, because what I was actually doing is telling her a dog had passed away. And I could see the dog. And it was my friend who kind of interjected. And she looked at me and she said, Judy, I think we better go. And I said, oh, and I realized what I was doing. And I said, you know, I'm really sorry. I'm just going to have to go. Sometimes I get this stuff really wrong and walked away. And of course, she hadn't known that her dog had been killed that day.
Oh my gosh!
But and it was such a horrific awakening and a learning for me, because this dog was so vibrant, and he just all he wanted to do is to say, "Tell her I'm here. It's all good." So I was sharing that information without a break, without a thought. So tell me about this the dog that you saw, and how you identified that the dog was from way back, not maybe something much more recent.
Well, it was funny. As soon as we went into this particular museum, I sensed that there was a little dark-colored dog running around. And I looked at Tom and I said, as soon as we walked through the door, I said, there's a dog in here. And he's a ghost. He's earthbound. And, of course, Tom just looked at me and he just rolled his eyes and he said, okay, we'll have to,
come on,
have to see about that.
Yeah.
so it was kind of funny because where we were was at Sir John Soane's museum. He is for the listeners, he is one of the most famous British architects that lived from 1753 to 1837. So anyway, his home is now a museum. And it has like a wealth of architectural pieces and so forth because he was an architect and he collected those pieces and antiquities. Even priceless works of art are in this home. So it's really worth visiting. And I do remember in his basement, he actually has an Egyptian sarcophagus, which is kind of wacky.
Yeah.
But long story short, we had walked around and this little dog kept following me and, so as we walked around, there's a portrait gallery. And in the portrait gallery hangs this huge portrait of Mrs. Soane, Mrs. John Soane. And in her lap is this little black and tan dog in this painting. Oh. And I said, that is the dog that I see. And so just outside the portrait gallery is this little exposed to the air courtyard, and there's a little white stone in the middle of it. And I said, that's where the dog is buried. And Tom said, okay, we'll have to check it out. And on the sure enough, that was the burial place of the dog. And the dog's name is Fanny. And that dog was the love of Mrs. Soane's life. And so in order to confirm that the dog was actually running around there, you know, we always doubt ourselves until we get confirmation. So I went to one of the docents and I said, I have a question to ask you, and you're probably going to think I'm crazy, but has anybody working here seen the spirit, you know, the ghost or the image of a little dog running around? And she says, she leaned over and she said kind of softly, yes. Everybody that works here has seen this little dog. Oh. And I said, is this the dog? Is this Fanny? And she said, yes, we firmly believe this is Fanny. So she looked at me and she said, do you sense any human ghosts walking around? Because I told her about my abilities. And I said, no, I don't sense any human ghosts at all. And she said, well, neither has anybody who has ever worked here sensed any human ghosts, only the dog. So, I thought that was a great confirmation. She also told me that after the Soanes passed away, they sold the house, and there was a gentleman and his wife who bought the house that had two small dogs, two dachshunds, I think, and neither of the dachshunds would enter the house. They were afraid. So they had to move the dachshunds next door. I guess they bought the second house next door.
Wow.
So little Fanny is still running around in that house. So if you go to visit John Soane's house, it's up near Baker Street, near the Sherlock Holmes Museum, as a matter of fact, around the corner from it. You may sense little Fanny running around.
Oh, bless her. That's really quite sweet. Very warming. Why would she stay, do you think? Because of the house, though?
I think that she just really loved her house. She loved playing in that house. And that's the sense that she gave me when I was there.
Oh, that's really kind. Did they? But the owners, they've passed over successfully into spirit. They're not ghosts.
Right. They both crossed over. So that's interesting because it normally doesn't work that way. That our pets stay behind. But Fanny loved running around and playing in this house. And Fanny continues to love playing in this house even long after his parents are gone.
Oh, that's so really sweet.
That's a priority, I guess. You know?
yeah, absolutely. Why not? That's what you like doing. Then why give it up?
That's right.
And it's interesting because if you know, the lady, when you asked her, she leant over and said it quietly, well, yes. Because, of course, here there's in the UK, there is very much a split division, a quite clear split, actually, about whether or not people believe in ghosts and spirits or not. And some people don't like the advertisements that where there's some connection to a haunting, because it puts people off from visiting, whereas other places thrive on it, and of course people go there specifically for that reason.
Sure. Yeah, I can absolutely see that.
So your trip to London, all these historic places, is there anywhere in the UK that you didn't visit, or any avenue of history that you didn't visit that you would like to in the future?
Oh my gosh, there's so many other castles and homes that we haven't been to. I couldn't list them. I would actually have to ask my partner.
The expert.
Yeah, he's the expert. I just go along for the ride. But I will tell you, though, that the fun part about being a medium on vacation is that you get twice as much out of any vacation, because you talk to a lot of the people who passed.
That's true.
And you learn their history. One of the people that really floored me was the ghost of George Boleyn, Anne Boleyn's brother.
Okay.
I didn't even know who he was. I didn't know there was a George Boleyn. We went to visit Hever Castle, which turned out to be the home of the Boleyn family.
Yes, yeah.
And as we mentioned, Anne of Cleves earlier, I understand that Henry VIII bequeathed that castle to Anne of Cleves later on. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
It's a fantastic location. It's a beautiful place.
It is gorgeous, yes.
And it's actually one of the places that when children in our school system are being taught about Henry VIII, that's one of the regular school trips.
Oh, no kidding. I did not know that.
Yes, yeah. Because of its history, because of its location. Yeah, it's lovely.
That's fascinating. What's interesting about my trip to Hever Castle is I call this my book, by the way, is separated into parts, and this was the last part, part 10, and I call it my most amazing paranormal experience in England, because number one, I didn't know who he was. When we walked in the door, I heard him say, "My name is George," and he spoke in what I would call Old English. I read a lot of Shakespeare, and I had Old English courses in college, so it was easier for me to understand what I call, I guess, kind of an accent. but when I walked in there, he said, "My name is George," and I looked at my partner and I said, Do you have any idea who George would be here in Hever Castle?" And he said, "My gosh, of course, that would be George Boleyn." And I thought, "Oh, is that Anne Boleyn's brother?" And he said, "Yes." You know, when you know the history of it, and somebody asks you a question, you look at them like, "Why don't you know this?" So that's what I felt like. But George, what was amazing about this is that George Boleyn's ghost followed us around Hever Castle. He acted like a tour guide. He showed us where Anne Boleyn's room was. He told me a date, and he said, "This is the date that I am most proud of my sister." Of course, I had to look it up when I got home, and I found out that that was the year that his sister was given her first royal title.
Okay.
I had no idea. He made me feel as we went into, I guess it would be the dining room, there was a giant fireplace, and suddenly he made me feel like my elbow was on fire. And he told me that when he was a boy, he had burnt his elbow in the fireplace. He had scorched his elbow. So just all kinds of interesting things that I got as I walked through Hever Castle, and George was guiding us.
Such clear information.
I'm sorry?
But such clear information, the clarity, the date, the detail, helping you to experience and feel where there was pain or uncomfortableness.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always surprised when ghosts can convey such such exact information. And that happened actually in quite a few other cases when I was experiencing the ghosts in England, that they would give me names or exact dates or something like that.
We're very clear with our Queen's English over here, you know, Rob.
I do.
even in death, we still get it right. It's all good. I think it's as a medium when you're communicating and you're really striving to support a person that sat in front of you and trying to offer them resolve and a bit of TLC, a little bit of reassurance. Those specific details are, you know, you're so hopeful that you're going to be able to have that communicated to you with such clarity. And for George to be able to do that, I mean, I know there's this theory that the longer somebody has been passed, the more energy they're able to produce to communicate. I'm not sure I completely buy that, I'll be honest. But I've known some fantastic readings very, very quickly over somebody's passed. But to have that communication, that connection where he absolutely was aware of who you were, what you were able to do, and lead you round the castle, I mean, that's very powerful, isn't it?
It sure is, and I agree with you that I don't think that the longer a ghost is in existence, the more energy they can draw. I just think they can only draw the energy that's available to them at a given time.
Yeah. So aspirational wise, in terms of, I mean, obviously, how does investigating in the UK differ from the States?
Well, gosh, there's so much more history. I mean, literally thousands of years of history in the UK, and there's only really, you know, hundreds of years since this country, the US, has been settled. Of course, we have a lot of Native American ghostly activity here, and I've run into a lot of that as well, but. Civilization was more structured in the UK for a longer period of time. So there are a lot more, there's a lot more information.
And I mean, I've investigated some fabulous places. I'm very fortunate to live in a country where there is so much history. And certainly where I live now is at the foot of a hill where a 5-minute walk takes me to a Neolithic burial ground. So you're never far away from history here. And there's been some, a Margam Castle in Port Talbot in South Wales just never fails to amaze with activity, paranormal activity. It's every person that investigates there or walks in experiences something. It's just, you know, whether that be audible or physical. I mean, it's just some fabulous places. So are you proposing a repeat visit?
Oh gosh, yes! I can't wait to come back. there's not only from the historic perspective, but also from the paranormal perspective. Just some of the places that I went to, I encountered so many ghosts in Hampton Court Palace, so many ghosts in the Tower of London that I wrote about. We even walked into a portal, which is a doorway used by ghosts to go from one place to another within a portal of energy. And it sounded like it was vibrating. That was in the Salt Tower in the Tower of London. There's so much to uncover, both historically and paranormally speaking, if that's a word.
Yeah, and in fact, not far from where you would have been standing as you walk around the Tower of London, there is a tour of, there's two tours actually that overlap. So one tour is the Jack the Ripper tour.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a paranormal school kind of show some time ago now on television where they took mediums who were training around that area, around that tour, and asked them to say what it is that they were experiencing. So quite often they picked up on the stabbings that happened. And interestingly, that tour also overlaps with the Harry Potter tour.
Oh.
If you're not careful and you cross over tours halfway through, you've got a very different experience. But that kind of history, even down to you know, the serial killing and things, is very close to the Tower of London, just walking through the streets.
Yes, the amount of history is just is overwhelming. By the way, one of the fun parts of going through Hampton Court Palace that I didn't mention is that one of the docents told us a story of his own ghostly encounter, and I have that in the book, The Ghosts of England on a Medium's Vacation, and there's a link to a YouTube video. He let me videotape him, and he told it in his own words. So that was really cool to get actually somebody, a firsthand witness of a ghost.
That's fantastic. And in Hampton Court, there are many passageways behind the main public area.
Mm-hmm.
That links rooms, and I was fortunate enough some time ago now to accompany in fact it was Dr. Kieran O'Keefe who we went, and he did a lot of his paranormal and parapsychology investigation there when he was sort of kind of learning, I suppose, and developing his skill set. And he knew all of the background passageways, and we went through a few to get from A to B, and it was fascinating.
Did you happen to run into the screaming ghost of Catherine Howard?
The only female that I picked up on was along it's almost like a galley with very, very deep set windows.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very long corridor, and on the left as you walk down, there's these huge windows that you can sit in. There was a female just rushing along there towards me as I walked down, but nothing in terms of making a noise, or it was just rushing as in running towards me and then almost past me and through.
I happened to leave, I think it was the Great Watching Chamber part of the castle, where Henry VIII would make an entrance and people would wait for him to come in. Connected to that room outside of it is, for the listeners, is a place called it's now called the Haunted Gallery, but it is a long corridor. And as soon as I walked through there, I suddenly heard a woman screaming, and I looked up and I was looking around, and I didn't realize that I was hearing the screaming in my head. Mm. And I saw a woman running toward me in what looked like a dress from the period, from the 1500s, and she ran right through me, and my whole body went cold.
And that's the experience I had without the sound. So
okay.
I just had them running towards me and then passed, just gone, as if, you know, she hadn't, there was no diversion, but I didn't feel her go through me. It was just, she was there and then gone again.
Oh, well, I'm glad you didn't hear the screaming. The chill, I mean, my entire body felt like my body temperature dropped by like 10 degrees.
Wow.
And it was, I just stood there shocked. And I was listening to an audio tour, and right after that happened, the audio tour said, in this hallway, young Catherine Howard has been seen running down the hallway. Because that was the hallway that she ran to go beg Henry to spare her life. At the end of the hallway, she was told by one of Henry's people that she was going to be executed.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, that Henry was not even in the palace at the time. I guess that makes him kind of a coward, because he sent somebody to tell her that she was going to be executed, and he disappeared. But she ran down there. And if people go to visit, Catherine Howard is, it's not a residual haunt. It's actually an intelligent haunt, meaning that it's interactive. Residual is just like a film strip that happens over and over, same thing. But she's been known to touch people, and certainly she ran through me. So if people go in that hallway, the haunted gallery, as it's called, you may be able to run into screaming Catherine Howard begging for her life.
Just what you want, isn't it?
Yeah. That was not exactly what I was looking for when I was going to the palace.
The funny thing is that you experience these things, but as a medium, and you're acknowledging it because you're in that moment. but it's just not unusual to us. It's quite a usual, you know, it's just quite a normal thing. Oh, okay, I need to check that out. I need to find out who that was. it's just another normal occurrence for us to be able to experience that.
It is funny, Julie, how we, being mediums, that over time we just kind of accept things and then we go, oh, let me figure that out, yeah, instead of being totally scared by it.
Yeah, and people have said, I live in a very, 500-600 year old old farmhouse, used to be a hayloft. And people say, well, my husband actually said, do you think this place is haunted? I said, well, does it matter? Because you don't believe. But actually, thinking about it, you know, experiencing things, sensing, hearing, and sometimes just kind of walking along the corridor and bumping into a male in the corridor. And I think, actually, yes, it is. But I don't even think about it in that way anymore. I just think, oh, there's somebody else in the house, and that's it. It's just not an issue.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Rob, as always. And we've kind of come to the end of the show, and we've run out of time again. And
oh, my gosh.
I know, it's just gone so quickly. So let everybody know, where can they get the books, and list the books, because every single one of your books is A1. And I would absolutely recommend people just to go and have a look, because your style of writing is just so easy to read. So name your books, where you can get them from, and how they can contact you.
Well, thank you, Julie. The first book was Ghosts and Spirits. The second book was Lessons Learned from Talking to the Dead. Then there's Pets in the Afterlife and Pets in the Afterlife 2. And the latest one is Ghosts of England on a Medium's Vacation. And they're all available on Amazon, Amazon UK, Amazon, wherever you are in the world, actually, you can get them on Amazon. There's a lot more that we didn't get to talk about places outside of London. From Stratford upon Avon, Canterbury, York, and everywhere.
York has got a very famous pub called the Golden Fleece, and York Castle Museum and the cells underneath are just amazing. Clearly, that's for another show, and so we can if you want to come back, Rob, that'd be amazing.
I would love to. I always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you. Well, everybody, go and buy these books. Absolutely amazing read. And we just can't wait to catch up with Rob again. Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.